The first plane load of prisoners from Afghanistan has landed at Guantanamo Bay Naval Station in Cuba. 20 prisoners were flown from Kandahar on a C-141 cargo plane that landed at the U.S. military base today. They were dressed in orange jumpsuits and caps and wore face masks. All the prisoners had their hands bound. Some were wearing leg shackles. At the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said the prisoners brought to Guantanamo Bay will be treated in a manner consistent with the Geneva Convention.
Being the kind of a country we are, it's our intention to recognize that there are certain standards that are generally appropriate for treating people who are prisoners of war, which these people are not. And you know, to the extent that it's reasonable, we will end up using roughly that standard, and that's what we're doing. I wouldn't want to say that I know in any instance where we would deviate from that or where we might exceed it.
Rumsfeld noted that the detainees arrived at the U.S. base in Cuba 4 months to the day after the attacks of September 11th.
Now that the first group of detainees has arrived at Guantanamo Bay, the question is, how will they be treated? Not just their living conditions, but their legal status and rights. NPR's Barbara Bradley reports.
U.S. authorities often choose Guantanamo Bay as a place to park foreigners that America doesn't quite know what to do with. In the 1990s, Haitian refugees and then Cuban refugees were housed there. According to Yale law professor Harold Coe, what happened to them was disturbing. Not what happened at the hands of the U.S. military, but in the U.S. courts. When Coe tried to defend the refugees, he was rebuffed by the Federal Court of Appeals in Atlanta.
The exact statement was, these alien detainees on Guantanamo are without legal rights that are cognizable in the courts of the United States. I think that this is one reason that there was a decision to bring them there, because the feeling was that there would be fewer claims that could be made by them or by their lawyers.
Earlier today, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said the government is now deciding how to handle the detainees. But he made it clear that these men are unlawful combatants, not prisoners of war.
Technically, unlawful combatants do not have any rights under the Geneva Convention. We have indicated that we do plan to, for the most part, treat them in a manner that is reasonably consistent with the Geneva Conventions, to the extent they are appropriate, and that is exactly what we have been doing.
Ruth Wedgwood, a military law expert at Johns Hopkins in Yale, says unlawful combatants sometimes can be treated as prisoners of war would be. For example, Manuel Noriega.
When we brought him back for arraignment, he demanded to be treated as a POW, saying, I'm a general, and I was fighting in a war. And we said, well, no, you're not, but just in case you are, we'll treat you the same as if you were.
So Noriega was allowed to wear his uniform in prison and at trial, for example. In the same way, the Al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees are expected to live in the same conditions as POWs. They will get adequate shelter, food, and medical care. The Red Cross can check up on them. They can receive some mail and practice their religion. The distinction between POW and unlawful combatant becomes more important when the legal proceedings begin. Here's why. An unlawful combatant is someone who doesn't play by the rules of warfare. For example, he doesn't wear a uniform or carry his weapon openly. The administration says that members of Al-Qaeda and perhaps the Taliban fit that description. International law takes a much dimmer view of that kind of unlawful fighter. They have far fewer rights at trial than a legitimate soldier who may have committed a war crime, like killing a civilian. Under the Geneva Convention, the captured soldier or POW who faces a military tribunal is supposed to get the same rights at trial as our own military personnel would get at a court-martial. David Sheffer was ambassador at large for war crimes under the Clinton administration.
The prisoner of war can stand there and say, I hereby exercise all of the rights accorded me under the Third Geneva Convention, including my right to a counsel of my choice, and the court must respect that. The unlawful belligerent, who is not a prisoner of war, stands before the same court and does not have the right to say that.
Other differences. A POW must get a trial within 3 months. He cannot be pressured to confess, and he has a right to appeal to U.S. civilian courts up to the U.S. Supreme Court. An unlawful combatant, on the other hand, receives whatever rights the U.S. government gives him, making the rules that the Defense Department is now drafting for military tribunals absolutely critical. The distinction becomes a huge issue when it comes to evidence. Military law experts say hearsay evidence, or secondhand accounts, could not be used against a POW in most cases, even when facing a military tribunal. But they say such evidence can be used against an unlawful combatant. Ruth Wedgwood says that distinction would be critical because the evidence will be so messy.
In sorting out fish from fowl amongst al-Qaeda detainees, we're not going to have the kind of first-class evidence that we're used to. We have it on bin Laden because of his videotapes, but most of them weren't so camera-happy.
Before all this begins, the U.S. has to decide whom it's going to prosecute. David Sheffer.
The primary aim is to determine what are the future threats against the United States and where is the top leadership. Now, beyond that, they, of course, are going to look at the individual and say, well, what role is this guy, play in all of this? And they'll make a determination whether it's worth the effort to prosecute.
In most cases, he believes the U.S. will decide it's not worth the effort and will send that person back to his home country. Barbara Bradley, NPR News, Washington.